Well, I made an error on the bulletin.
I know.
And I was realizing this marks a year that I've been doing the bulletin because I took it over at the beginning of September. My dad said, "I don't want this anymore." And so this makes a year. And I think this is the first time I've made this mistake. I couldn't quite decide on a sermon title, so I'll just do the other stuff and fill that in next, fill it in before sending it out. And this morning in class, said, "What did I end up deciding on that?" And look, oh, it's last week's sermon title. So I guess we're gonna go part two on that. It works out though. David was such a groovy guy. We could say the same thing about Ezekiel, I suppose. Ezekiel was such a groovy guy as well. And there's another connection between last week with David and this week with Ezekiel. I started off by saying David was strange last week, if you remember. I feel very confident in saying Ezekiel is strange. If you read chapters 1 through 7 this week, or if you have read Ezekiel before, we are on solid ground in saying Ezekiel is strange. Ezekiel's weird, in fact. I hope you got a chance to look through this week, those first seven chapters. And once you get past the four beings with the four faces and four wings and wheel in the middle of the wheel with eyes all over it, that looks a little bit like Revelation. Then you get to the stuff where Ezekiel's actually doing things. Ezekiel is eating a scroll, so he has the words. And then Ezekiel is told, "The people that I'm sending you to, these are not foreigners with strange language." He was sending him in Babylonian territory among Israelite exiles. He said, "I'm not sending you to people with strange language, people that won't understand you." He said, "In fact, if I did send you to people that didn't understand you, you might have a chance of getting through to them. I'm sending you to people who will understand what you're saying and will not listen." And so God has Ezekiel do something strange. He doesn't go in and preach. He doesn't go in and prophesy in the way that we think of somebody like Isaiah or Jeremiah. He gets to some of that, but that's not what he does first. He said, "Here's what you're going to do. You're going to go in among the exiles." Actually, it's kind of a strange wording where it says the Spirit picked him up and moved him there to among the exiles. And he said, "I want you to scratch out a picture of Jerusalem on a stone, on a tablet. And then make a little, for lack of a better word, diorama of the siege upon Jerusalem. Make ramps and siege towers and to show what's going to happen." And then tie yourself up, lay down in front of your little Jerusalem, so the people can see you. Do this for 390 days. We don't know if Ezekiel was tied up and laying down in front of a little model of Jerusalem all day for those 390 days, or and Lord Israel bear their sin. When you're done with that, turn aside and face Jerusalem, and lay down for another 40 days to bear their sin. That's weird, right? And he talks about, says, "You're going to cook your own food." He gives a recipe. Some say it's one of the few recipes in the Bible for this bread they're supposed to make. And he says, "Human excrement pan." And Ezekiel says, "I don't feel like doing that. He says, I've never eaten anything unclean, and I'm not going to do this there. He's going to cook it over cow excrement. But that's the scene. To begin his message, it says first, after he's picked up and dropped among the people, it says he takes 7 days to take it all in. It says, I sat among them for 7 days, overwhelmed, and then lays down for 430 days, bearing their sin, in order to get a message about what's going to happen to it. It's weird. And if you know something about Ezekiel, it's not going to be the last weird thing he does. He does get into some more typical prophecy and preaching later. But he starts off with this very symbolic, very different type of message to a group of people he knows have heard all of the words. They've heard all of these things, and they've heard the other prophets say them, and they haven't listened. And so God says, you need to do something different to these people. It reminds me of where we left off last week. Oh good, the politics stuff again. I see on your faces. We said, if we want to change that viewpoint of viewing our neighbors as enemies and viewing people with different opinions as enemies, we have to change the conversation. If you remember, that's where we left off last week. Just like Ezekiel was told, you can't bring the words. They'll understand the words. They won't do anything. You have to do something different. I think if we are going to have any chance of bringing our divided nation, divided church, divided community, if we're going to be able to do that, we have to be able to change that conversation. Something that I had read from a minister in the D.C. area, he said, a lot of times people come to him asking, what can I do to make a change in D.C.? He said, well, here's what you need to do. Here's one thing you need to understand first. He says, you go to D.C., he says, you look and you see the people with their fingers in the air, having just licked their finger. They're testing the wind, right? They want to see which way the wind is blowing. These are the politicians. They're going to tell which way the wind is blowing, and that's the way they're going to go. They're very good at figuring out the wind. And you can change the politicians. You can vote somebody new in, but they all seem to end up with their fingers in the air, seeing where the wind blows. So if you want to change things, you don't change the politicians. You change the wind. And then, you know, it gets into ideas on how to do that. So we need to find new ways of talking. And it's not just those wicked politicians. When's the last time you went on Facebook? I don't know how many of you are on there. I am rarely on there, and when I am, I wish that it was even more rarely that I'm on there. It's just fights. It's people trying to prove themselves right by being louder than everybody else. If we are going to reach our nation, our community, if we're going to be able to change the wind, we have to not just get better arguments and louder arguments. We have to change that conversation. And so, in the spirit of Ezekiel, let's talk about some ways that we can do that. Maybe when we get out of our own way, we can see Jesus a little clearer. How do we change the conversation? How do we do things differently? I think we need to follow the examples of these strange people that were in our readings this week. We can follow the example of Ezekiel. Not the laying down in front of a diorama or some of the other weird stuff he does. But think about what Ezekiel was doing. He was sent to live among people in crisis. People that even God said, these people aren't going to listen. And the first thing he did was lay down, and it says he bore their sin. He observed. And even before he got to the laying down, he said he just took it in because he was overwhelmed. I did forget one thing. He was bound up. He says he was tied up when he was down. So, okay. Wrapped up, tied up, tangled up, and got. All right. If we're going to follow that example of Ezekiel and see how he communicated these people, we need to understand the people that we are around. We need to understand the people that we want to reach. We need to understand even the people that are different than us. If we're going to follow the example of Ezekiel, we need to get rid of the they talk. This came up, I think, before class on Wednesday. I was talking with Gary. Somebody said something about they. He says, who's they? They always seem to be causing trouble. They are at the heart of all of the problems. And that's how we talk about people who are different than us often. It's just this nameless, bodiless they. And it's easy to rant about they. It's not so easy when you actually know someone. Think about the Thanksgiving dinner table. Is there that relative that you know you don't want certain subjects brought up because there's going to be disagreement? Do you think of that relative as what's wrong with this country? Do you think of that relative as the person trying to destroy all that is good? No. There's someone you love who is different and thinks differently. If we resist casting people as the faceless they, maybe we can understand. It's very difficult to hate someone that you're praying for. And I don't mean, pray to God to get them or pray to God to change them. Or I read somewhere that as a comedian said, you'd be surprised how easy it is to make I'm praying for you into a threat. Not that kind of praying for somebody. But if you get to know and understand and be able to pray for their needs, pray for the things going on in their lives, pray sincerely, even for somebody that disagrees with you, boy, it gets hard to hate that person. Ezekiel did not have it easy. And he was around people that did not want to listen. He took the time to try to understand them for his message to be effective. So, we can follow the example of Ezekiel. Next, let's go back and talk about David, because he was in this week's reading too. If we follow the example of David, once we have understood those around us, we think back to David's statement with Mephibosheth. He said, how can I show kindness? Who can I show kindness to? David wasn't perfect. We read that in this week's readings. Well, like we talked about last week, David had a value for life. And David saw God, people the way God saw them. And David sought to do kindness. If, instead of getting together with the people that we disagree with, to continue disagreeing, to talk about the things we disagree about, how can we work together to do kindness? It's very easy to think, I'm the one trying to do the good things for the country, which means the other people are the ones trying to do harm. Well, let's come together to do some good together. Instead of finding out, who can we go help? How can we show God's love together? The truth is, when we work together, we find out that we need people who think differently than we do. As much as we are wanting to blame all the country's problems on our division, and we're definitely talking about that, the truth is we don't need to all agree. And having two different sides, two different points of emphasis, can be a good thing. The conservative mindset places a high emphasis on personal responsibility, things that we need in our lives, things we need in our families, things we want our kids to know, to be morally upright, to be personally responsible for the things that we need to do. We need that. The liberal point of view is very good at reminding us of the importance of social responsibility. How we can't just be in our own bubble. We need to be responsible socially and look out for those who need help. Take care of those who can't take care of themselves. And we need to find a balance between those two things. And it's not that either side doesn't care about the other point of emphasis. They're just more focused on theirs. When we come together, we try to find a way to blend those things. We find a way to be better by being together. A minister named Tony Campolo, who leads a movement that he calls the Red Letter Christians, he said that we need liberals and conservatives because conservatives are very good at maintaining lines that should never be crossed. And liberals are very good at eliminating lines that never should have been drawn. We need both of those. And if we could take the attitude of David, which looks not to how can I win, how can I improve what I have, grow my borders, if instead it says, how can I do kindness? How can I show God's love? We will all be better off for that. So we follow the example of Ezekiel. We follow the example of David. We follow the example of Jesus. In this past week's reading, we looked at some ideas of how God responds to lost things that have been returned. The shepherd with 100 sheep that loses one sets the 99 aside, goes out to find the one, and when he finds it, comes back and says, let's celebrate. The woman with 10 coins loses one, cleans everything out of the house, sweeps to try to find that one coin, and then celebrates when he finds it. And then the prodigal son, the one who is lost. How much more celebration is there in the presence of the angels over one who is lost than 99 who were never strayed? We know those stories. In those stories, Jesus calls us to find ourselves in those stories. Think about the prodigal son. It's probably more familiar. It's the one with more developed characters. I think we don't have to just find ourselves in one character from that parable. I think we can be invited to see ourselves as the son and think of some of the ways that the prodigal son is portrayed, some things I might be feeling. Repentant, embarrassed, redeemed, loved. I think we can find ourselves in that place sometimes, as someone who is in need of that redemption. I think we can even think of ourselves in the place of the father there. I know typically, you know, we think of the father there as simply the role of God, but we can think about the traits that we see in the father. It's joy. Right? It's forgiveness first, but the joy over the one who has returned. Joy over the resolution of this problem. He had a child who said, "My life would be much better if you were no longer alive. Give me my inheritance." Remember, we talked last week about how easy it would be to label an enemy. This father could have labeled his son as an enemy. He said, "My life would be better if you were dead." When he comes back, the emotion is not anger, but joy. When we have healed those divisions, there is joy. So I think we can see ourselves at times as a son, at times as a father. But I urge you to resist being found in the place of the older brother. I think sometimes that's the character we don't talk about as much. And perhaps that's the character that that Jesus was most talking about, because I think he was a comparison for many of the people that were around Jesus and were hearing this. What is the identifying trait of the brother? Bitterness. Resentment. Doesn't matter what he has. He can't stand to see this unworthy brother getting something good. We have to set aside that bitterness and resentment in the face of those that we disagree with. If we've got any chance of feeling the joy that Jesus talked about in that parable. Now, I hope this morning you don't just remember the silliness of me laying up here. And I hope there's no offense caused by that. But we have to do something different sometimes. We can't just keep turning up the volume and doing the same thing. We need to learn from the people that God has called over time to speak in those rough times, those divided times. I think we can learn something from Ezekiel, from David, from the parables of Jesus, and try to come together. We talked a lot last week about not labeling enemies. We have an enemy. And Satan very much would like to see us divided. We have an enemy that would love for us to look at our brothers and sisters as enemies and obstacles. And we have to resist it. We need to continue this conversation of how we can change the conversation. I promise we're not going to talk about politics from now until November. We'll move on to something else next week, I promise. But it just seemed important. And looking at David and Ezekiel and Jesus, I don't see that bitterness. I don't see that desire to destroy. I see God's love and God's joy. And when we're doing things right, I see it here as well. So if there's anything that you need this morning, if there's anything you need to say this morning, we go through this every week, but if you have something you need prayers for this morning, we want to pray for you. We want to share in your joy, pain, whatever it is. We want to understand each other better. If you need to respond to the call of baptism this morning, let's do that. Whatever you need this morning, please let us know. Come forward as we stand and sing.
That thine affections been nailed to the cross, is thy heart right?